How's it going? And welcome to episode 160 of On the Wire, proud member of the Kitchen List Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On the Wire Pod. I am Adam Howe. You can follow me at 80 Grid. That's all spelled out. And Kevin Hastings is at Hastings Kevin on the Twitter. We have a great show lined up for you today as we break down the recommendations for the fifth Fab run of the year, Kevin. I like these nice round number episodes, like 160 just feels like there's a little substance to this one. Not that there isn't substance to every episode that we do together, but happy to be doing it 160 times with you. How you doing?
Oh, doing great. I agree. Yeah, 160. This is huge. Love it. I was actually doing a little better literally 2 minutes ago, and Adley Rutschman just hit a three-run home run against the Royals. Royals still lead, but I cut that lead to less than half what it had been there for a little bit.
Yeah, we just mentioned that as right before we hit record. We are recording this again on a Friday, so thanks for everybody who's out there watching us a day earlier than normal. I get those Yahoo notifications for all the players that are on my Yahoo teams, and Adley, luckily for me on that end, I got that notification for a reason. Not the notification you wanted to see, obviously, against your Royals, but hopefully they pull it out for the win. I just want I just take the home runs. I don't have any skin in the game on the other side of the ball.
Oh, that was a grand slam.
I'm okay with that.
Even. Yeah. You got four RBI as well there.
There we go. I'll take it. we'll leave more Royal talk for later on in the episode. We find a way to squeeze it in. And it's a good one, but let's get into other pieces of news. We got quite a bit to go, and I'm going to lump a lot of this together. As we have a bunch of debuts happen this week. Some major league debuts, some just 2024 debuts, some situational debuts. So, I'm going to get your take on these three young arms that are making some version of a debut this past week. Kyle Hurt for the Dodgers. He made his first MLB start, so his starting debut. He only goes two innings, but he got the ball first, so that's a start. Jack Leiter made his MLB debut, as I'm sure most of us are all aware at this point. On this past Thursday, he went 3 2/3. He let up a whole bunch of earned runs. Maybe not all of them really his fault, but they still happened. And they still count on the sheet. Quinn Priester of Pittsburgh, he made his 2024 debut on Friday. That's today as we're recording this. He lasted 4 1/3. He let up 4 earned runs of his own. And no, it was not Paul Skeens making his MLB debut, which I know a lot of people are clamoring for. I actually doing drop off at my dropping off my daughter at school, run into a bunch of other dads dropping off their kids, and kept hearing whispers of people like, "Oh, I'm going to go to the Indianapolis game, the AAA game, because there's their kid is who's really good," and like not naming him by name or anything. They're just like, "He's supposed to be really good. It'll be up in Pittsburgh anytime." I'm like, I just, lean over. I'm like, "Yeah, if you can go to that game, you should go to that game." Cause it might be his last start, in town. But anyway, these three guys are actually making their debuts. They're actually at least putting up stats for this past week. Any overall takes from these three? None of them came close to qualifying for a win for their teams, not only in production, but also in length. Do you see anything moving forward for these, or is this like simply just forget about it?
I don't think I do see much for right now. And that seems crazy, right? Because I'm a person that I take a lot of risks with the streaming pitchers, especially two start pitchers. But I really don't have much interest here. One, the performances we've seen so far in the cases of Jack Leiter and Quinn Priester. I was really nervous about Jack Leiter anyway, in spite of how well he had performed in the minor leagues so far this season. We just hadn't seen him do much anywhere close to the expectations we had when he was drafted. So I'm going to have to see something at the major league level from him before I have any interest. Kyle Hurt, I think the Dodgers are sticking with this six-man rotation for now. They have an off day Monday, which means he's the one that will get skipped. It looks or appears like we would see him next weekend. So he would probably get a start this coming week versus Toronto, I believe. But two innings, they'll stretch him out, three or four. I'd be much more interested if he was the follower, not the opener. So I really don't see much here I'm interested in right now. But in this pitching landscape we have right now, there are going to be times throughout the season where we're almost forced to use guys like this. So it's worth keeping an eye on, see who kind of hopefully one or two of them start to perform a little better.
Yeah, of course, Jack Leiter already demoted as well by the Rangers. So we'll see how long it takes him to, you know, get back up and actually be able to perform for our teams. Whether or not we want to allow that to happen is to be seen. But he made his debut. You can still fab him if you're really into him. You know, maybe you get him for a lot cheaper this week because he's obviously not on the major league team, but in an NFBC format, at least he's eligible. So you could stash him a little bit later if he is available in your leagues. Yeah, I'll be waiting just for the Paul Skeens start in Pittsburgh that, you know, we would assume, especially now that we've already hit that, you know, extra year of control threshold in, you know, mid to late April, that 3 week period, that I'm expecting him to be up at any point for Pittsburgh, even if it's in the same situation where it's like a spot start here or there, what have you. So we've already seen some teams like Miami send down their top, you know, their young arms, even though they are a little stretched thin in the rotation. Max Myers, who I'm obviously referring to. So I, you know, the whole idea of pitchers are weird, though, right? With young pitchers, like, we want to control their innings, but they're still going to throw in AAA. So it's like, why are they going to get more development? Is that the idea that they just get more development because and more attention at the AAA level than they would at the major league level? And I'm not sure that you could convince me in either direction here. I'm very confused.
Yeah, I think it's almost when they tell us it's for monitoring innings or limiting innings, but the innings they are throwing are high quality innings, it's time manipulation, service time manipulation. That's all there is to it. They're doing the exact same thing. They could do it in either place, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm just trying to beat around the bush there. I like that you just got right to it. All right, well, I got a couple major leaguers not pitching, but not because they're being demoted, because they are hitting the IL. You know, stop me if you've heard this story before, Kevin, this year. You know, there's a whole bunch of injuries on here. We're not even going to talk about, you know, I will throw it out there, like Sawyer Gibson Long in the Detroit system is having Tommy John surgery. It doesn't really affect anything because he wasn't really doing anything for us anyway this season. But the two I want to mention to you and get your takes on the situations that they leave behind, at least for a short period of time, is Garrett Whitlock. Boston hits the IL with left oblique tightness. The only good news coming out of Boston right now is that they actually won a game, and it looks like Rafael Devers is going to not hit the IL himself. He's just kind of day-to-day at the moment, at least according to Alex Cora. But they are out Garrett Whitlock. And then down in San Diego, Yu Darvish hits the IL with neck tightness. You know, the dreaded oblique is the dreaded oblique, simple as that. Neck tightness, I don't know what to make of neck tightness. But which one of the first, before getting into like the spots that they leave behind, if you got both of these guys on your roster, they're both hitting the IL at the same time, are you trying your best to stash them both? Or is one of these injuries worse than the other? So you're like, all right, fine, I'm not, you know, I got enough I'll probably have enough injuries besides these guys that I've got to make a decision.
Yeah. We have about 48 hours from when we're recording here until many of our league's fab runs. Hopefully we get more information. on both of these guys. However, just in a vacuum with the two injuries, I'm much more concerned about the oblique tightness with Garrett Whitlock, I think, mainly because Yu Darvish, more of a veteran, if he feels like he can go, they'll probably let him go. And it kind of crept up, right? He was scheduled to start on Saturday, and then this came up after a throwing session and some neck tightness. I think this is... And they backdated Yu Darvish's. So true. I think this is precautionary. Skip a start, maybe two, and they expect Darvish back. Whitlock obliques are we know how crazy they can be with hitters. Pitchers are putting torque on the core of their body as well. So I'm a little more nervous with the oblique tightness. Doesn't sound like it should be anything long-term, but until I hear more, that's the one I'm slightly more concerned about. And I would say Red Sox and Red Sox fans are as well. I mean, that the starting pitching for the Red Sox has been amazing to start this season, including Garrett Whitlock. And now we're down to where we're probably looking at both. We're probably looking at both Cooper Criswell. That's the name I was looking for there. I couldn't remember his first name. Cooper Criswell and Uwasawa. Probably both getting starts coming up in the next few days for Boston. So they're definitely going to want Whitlock back as soon as he can be available.
Yeah, I think Criswell's slated to probably go middle of next week. Ross Research doesn't even have a fifth starter in there with Whitlock hitting the IL earlier today. So a lot of options there. Boston doesn't exactly have like the depth as far as like we typically think of like the Dodgers or Miami having these guys that can come up and down and up and down, but they seem to be having to do that anyway, regardless of whether or not the talent level is there. And some of these guys are really interesting. Don't get me wrong. Like the system is at least, especially on the pitching side, is a lot more interesting than I think they have led others to believe in the past, like 5 years or so. Keep an eye on those names that are coming up and actually making starts for Boston based on the who they have coming up in the schedule, so that they're in Pittsburgh right now. They'll be traveling a short distance to Cleveland for their next series. Both teams have they're somewhat on the up. They're just not super scary teams, minus a pocket here or there. So could be something worth streaming in the right circumstances.
And that's kind of their schedule in general, looking ahead a little bit, right? Teams that on certain days can score some runs, on other days not at all, and strike out a lot, right? They have Cleveland coming up. They don't strike out, but they don't always score a lot of runs either. The Cubs, the Giants, the Twins, right? All these teams are kind of in that middle ground where they can have
good days.
They can also have their they don't scare me. They can strike out, but guys like this that we're not so sure about, they could put up a 7 or 8 spot on them. So yeah, it's a kind of a weird schedule coming up for Boston as far as determining who we're willing to throw out there.
So with Yu Darvish being, even if he just misses the one or maybe two starts, is there anybody in San Diego you think that can take advantage of, or you think they're just going to kind of piecemeal it together?
I kind of think they may really try to piece this together for a little bit. I do like Matt Waldron in the right matchups, if he's available in your league. Roster Resource has Randy Vasquez getting the start on Saturday versus Toronto, but then that his start coming up this week, if he sticks, would be at Colorado. So not much interest there, although I'm not so sure that I'm benching as many people in Colorado as I have in the past, just due to the quality of Colorado's lineup.
Doesn't seem to matter.
Thereof. Right. But, Colorado has a pretty intriguing week, and we get to the schedules later in the show, but 4 games at home and then 2 in Mexico City, that's pretty enticing.
Yeah. Just the weird off days alone, but the fact that they, And he's like, oh, great, they're going to be on the road. Yeah, but think about where they're going to be. Think right. about where that road actually takes them.
On the flip side, do not consider that rocky road sites, right, for the opposing pitchers, because Mexico City is even higher elevation, I believe. It doesn't even, yeah. So the ball's not moving there either. So this it's not rocky road. It's going to be more like Colorado than Colorado.
I am admittedly one of the main reasons we are recording this on Friday is because I am traveling back to Vegas for another work conference this weekend and into next week. So I will be very interested to see what the books have on there for the over under for that two game series. So we'll wait and see on that one with bated breath.
Because the only problem is probably even taking in that the environment. Over. Can we count on the Rockies to score runs?
Well, Houston just does it all. Yes, just let Houston do it all.
And they might very well could.
I mean, Kyle Tucker could probably just do it all on his own.
There Jordan we go.
Albridge can help. All right. Well, let's hit some more IL stints here. Now we're going to stay on the hitter side of things, Kevin. Get away from these pitchers that keep getting injured. And let the hitters have their fun in the category. You know, stop me if you've heard this one before, but Chris Bryan hit the IL. I know you're shocked. I see your shocked face. He does seem like the type of player at this point in his career that you just assume he's on the IL at any given point. But he goes back to the IL with a strained lower back. So he will not be a Colorado Rocky hitting the ball in Mexico City next week, because he'll still be on the IL. Sean Bouchard takes the place on the roster. We'll get to each of the other ones next, but I mean, Christian Yelich, Seiya Suzuki, spoiler, those are the other two we're going to talk about. But in Colorado, I mean, is Sam Bouchard somebody you're paying attention to? Is he going to take all that playing time, or is there anybody else of interest that can take advantage of this next week's schedule that you just alluded to?
Well, first of all, congratulations to Justin Mason. He can start wearing the Sean Bouchard jersey again that he was all excited about. And I want to monitor this over the weekend, but I'm interested in Sean Bouchard. I am going to skip ahead to how we normally do the show here. I just talked about four games at home for the Rockies for the first half of NFBC weeks, Monday through Thursday. All leagues, they're going to get those games home Monday through Thursday, but that's a full four-game set in NFBC formats where we can change our hitters out again on Friday. And then over the weekend, they only have a two-game series, but it is in Mexico City. If Sean Bouchard is playing every day, which I think he will, and he has so far since he's been called up, but his Steamer 600 projection, so a full season of plate appearances, 600 of them, is a .252 average, 22 home runs, 150 runs plus RBI, right at 74 and 76 of each of those, and 11 stolen bases. So we have a 2010 guy here with a decent batting average, nice run in RBI totals that he's projected for, has it's only been a couple of games, but doesn't look overwhelmed, has performed so far with the Rockies, one of their few bright spots, This is somebody I'm very interested in going forward if he is playing every day. So far he has. It's only been a couple of days. But if he's in the lineup again on Saturday and Sunday, or at least one of the two, lots of guys get days off over the weekend, then I'm very interested in Bouchard on Sunday evening. And that's why I have him as my number one player in our opportunity section for typically later in the show.
Yeah, but I mean, spoilers are fine. Maybe that's the name of the episode this week. But when you have that kind of obvious situation, you got to call it out as early as it calls for. Christian Yelich also hitting the IL with, again, shocker, a lower back strain. You know, Christian Yelich's back is not what it once was as a young gun. What impact is his absence having on the Milwaukee lineup, or what impact do you see it having for the next week that maybe we could take advantage of the situation?
Well, so far it's just been, and they've only faced righties all week long. So we haven't seen what might happen versus a left-handed starting pitcher. But so far, it's just South Frick and Jackson Churio and Blake Perkins, Roman center field for the Brewers. I think that's what we continue to see. I do have interest, and in early draft season, but before the injury, I was drafting Garrett Mitchell, who had performed very well early in 2023 prior to being injured. I still think he can work his way back into this lineup when he gets healthy. And he's still a little ways away. So for now, I think it's what we've seen this past week. Sal Frelick, Jackson Churio, and Blake Perkins roaming the outfield in Milwaukee.
Milwaukee should probably face off against two, maybe three lefties next week as they face off against Pittsburgh and the New York Yankees. So they might just hit one lefty from each of those rotations. So may not be a whole lot different than what you've been seeing for this past week when they've only been facing the righties anyway. So might be a good indication in general. Third one, as I mentioned, another outfielder hitting the IL this time for Sarah Sanchez's Chicago Cubs. Seiya Suzuki, he hits the IL with a right oblique strain. He's going to be sidelined probably a lot longer than the other guys that we've talked about. At least going to be sidelined for about 4 weeks. This doesn't mean he'll be back after 4 weeks. It literally just means he'll be sidelined for 4 weeks. So we'll see as we get closer to the end of that, where he stands with that. But that's a lot of time for any individual to take advantage of the extra spotlight, Kevin. Is there somebody in Chicago who has already or should be taking the added playing time to the next level that we should be paying attention to?
This is intriguing to me, this entire situation. Cody Bellinger is the everyday center fielder. We know that. That leaves two outfield spots. And Ian Happ, most days, the left fielder, he has DH'd a time or two this season. And Mike Tauchman has gotten some extra playing time against right-handed pitching. And we've seen a couple of short side platoon guys versus the couple of lefties they've faced. The intriguing one is Patrick Wisdom, who just returned from the IL on Friday and was inserted into right field first game back. We know he's only going to play against lefties. We know that, whether it's DH, whether it's a corner infield spot, or if he works out in right field when they're facing lefties, great for the Cubs for the next month or so. Hopefully the shorter end of the timeline for Suzuki. There is another guy that I am interested in that is not currently on the roster, but I'm not going to ruin another category for later, Adam. I'm going to save that one for later in the show.
Well, as anybody watching live sees that I'm throwing out all our Sarah Sanchez shout outs in the chat. Sarah, thanks for watching. I will skip the third one that she sent out. So I'll let you talk about that a little bit later, not to play too many spoilers. She was kind enough to give us this little shout out, just a heads up again. Sorry for, we're doing the show a little bit early, 48 hours. This is obviously something we would have noticed, as it happened on a Saturday. But Sarah's kind enough to let us know that Ian Happ did also left the game early with left hamstring tightness. So we'll be monitoring that as we head into Sunday. And maybe it comes up a little bit later on the show when you give out another shout out for another player to consider, Kevin. All right. So there's a couple outfielders hitting the IL. We have a second baseman hitting the IL as well. This time, Ozzie Albies returns to the IL with a fractured toe. That seems like it should hurt and sideline him a lot longer. But luckily for him, will not need surgery. He's only expected to miss 2 to 3 weeks. He's already been out for a few days. I know it's not turf toe. I know it's different, but I just keep picturing what happened with, Jazz Chisholm last year, and he was out for a whole lot longer than that. I mean, how much do you trust that kind of a timeline in this situation? I'm skeptical, but you know, the Atlanta organization is very good at providing information the way they want to provide it, and can kind of controlling the narrative in that way in the press. So, I mean, I guess I have to believe this, but what kind of an impact is his first, like he is going to be missing at least 2 to 3 weeks, but how much do you trust that when he comes back, he's going to, you know, be what we've been seeing over the, you know, the beginning of this season?
Well, it's, you know, with, I have to say it, I'm not a doctor, but my understanding of, you know, fractured toes, I've never had one. I've known people that had, my dad had one when I was a kid. And for what I understand, there's absolutely nothing you can do about it. Yep. Now it's going to heal on its own over time. It's going to be painful. Right. And Albies has said that this is very painful. So you stay off of it and you let it heal till it's no longer painful. If it's a very small fracture and they think it's going to be completely healed in 2 to 3 weeks, I could see that. I could also see it not being completely healed and then monitoring the pain and maybe a cortisone injection or that type of thing. However, if he's playing on it and it's not healed yet, it's probably not going to heal as quickly. So they probably try to avoid that. So the timeline, I, like you, I'm a little skeptical, but I can understand how it's a possibility. I'm just, you know, 2 to 3 weeks. So I'm figuring a month, right? And I, you know, we try to get as much of the Atlanta lineup as we can, versus righties. So far, it has been, Luis Gilmore. And versus lefties, it's been David Fletcher at second base. I really don't have a lot of interest. I guess I could see Gilmore being on the strong side of the platoon and getting a piece of Atlanta's lineup. I could understand that. I'm not really interested. But if I needed a middle infielder, I would take a look there and probably dive in a little deeper. The biggest effect of this is for those of us that roster Michael Harris the second, he's going to hit at the top of the order now in that two hole while Albies is out. So for all of those with Michael Harris shares, you're in for some extra plate appearances for the next 2 to 3 weeks, maybe a little longer.
That is until today, where they had Michael Harris back in the seven hole and Orlando Arcia in the two hole. Now if they're facing a lefty.
That's great.
So, I mean, Harris hit a home run today, so maybe, you know, that's fine. But the fact that they were facing a lefty today and they trotted out Arcia as in the number two hole, basically just replacing Albies both in the middle infield and in the two spot, was very interesting. I'll see if that is more of a, you know, matchup situation, which I venture to guess is, and we'll continue to see Harris in the two hole against righties moving forward, at least for the next couple of weeks. We saw this last year too, when Albies, now that was like the only opportunity Harris had to move up in the order. It's like he's either going to be in the bottom third of the order, or if Albie wasn't playing, then all of a sudden he jumps up to two. It's not like an incremental move up the order for Harris. It's either two or the bottom. And we're seeing that this year already as well. So, you know, enjoy the next 2 or 3 weeks or then some for everybody rostering Michael Harris out there. Let's squeeze in some positive news, and I'm going to find a way to twist this into negative news, Kevin. The positive news here is that we're getting a whole bunch of positive reports from the Kyle Bradish camp, from the Garrett Cole camps, two guys who are attempting to come back from their own respective UCL injuries without having surgery. You know, obviously there was a whole lot of talk when these injuries popped up during or like, you know, to start a spring training for either one of them. And after obviously tons of drafts have already happened and, you know, whether or not we're going to be stashing these guys, whether or not we're going to be picking them up early when they were dropped, et cetera, et cetera. So, like at this point in the season, is it really easy to just get really caught up into the small pieces of good news when you hear it, and make more of it than you probably should, in these cases? Would you be trusting these kind of, positivities regardless of what was going on in outside?
Well, I think it's better than bad news, right? I don't think I want to put too much stock into it. But there's a pretty big difference in timeline between Bradish and Garrett Cole here as well. Kyle Bradish is already making rehab appearances. He threw 44 pitches and three scoreless innings with four strikeouts. He's going to make his next start on Sunday. Not that we really look at wins and losses when we're talking about minor league rehab assignments, but he's got a pretty good offense behind him as well. Kyle Bradish does, while he's making these rehab starts as he's moving up to AAA Norfolk for the next one. But Garrett Cole throwing from 75 feet. Now, while that is a positive, that's, you know, we still got to get to, a simulation from flat ground, then off a mound, then live hitters, right? So
a lot of steps.
Yes. Yeah. While 75 feet, throwing from 75 feet and everything's fine and he feels good and no pain after, while that is good news, we still need a whole lot more good news for Garrett Cole. Kyle Bradish, on the other hand, he's somebody that I did hold on to where I had drafted him, and I'm pretty excited about what is going on so far. I don't expect him to perform at as high a quality as I had hoped when I drafted him, while he's trying to pitch through a partially torn UCL. But I'm pretty excited about what we've seen so far, and it would take a setback for me to not be as excited any longer. So the difference in the timelines is huge for me. I'm pretty excited about what we're hearing with Bradish right now. While it's good news for Garrett Cole, I'm like, we need to hear more.
Yeah, I think I'm the most worried about, regardless of how much positivity we're getting from either one of these guys, this is still a UCL injury. How much are you just worried about them coming back and then just being, they are already, quote, a ticking time bomb, right? Every pitcher is, ultimately. But how much are you putting trust into even Bradish, who's that far along making rehab stints, to come back at 100%? Grant, he's not coming back from Tommy John surgery. He's not coming back from any kind of surgery. Does the fact that he's coming back from not having surgery make you less or more worried about when he does make his MLB debut for the 2024 season?
Oh, I'm definitely more worried of, first of all, how long will he be able to remain healthy? Even more so than all pitchers, right? And then performance, right? Like I said, I don't expect him to perform as well as I did when I drafted him. But I expected a lot from Kyle Bradish this season. And if we can get even 80, 85% of that, he's going to be a very viable, valuable starter for our fantasy leagues, especially with everything else going on.
Yeah, I do wonder if in leagues where you can make trades, you know how a prospect comes up and they're just about to make their debut, that's their highest peak value and you can get most out of it. Like, I wonder if you do the same thing with Bradish. Like, as soon as he's set to make his Orioles debut or this 2024 debut, you just cut your losses. You get 80 cents on the dollar, because there's a very strong chance that after that, you're not getting anything. So it's just something to consider as far as strategy if you're looking for something in your trading leagues, how you want to handle that situation. All right, fine. I found a way to get some kind of good news in there. I tried to twist it around, but you got it. You forced my hand to talk about something positive, apparently. But now I need to get in. We need to pick your brain. All right. So we went into the show, full disclosure, transparency. We're like, I don't know what to talk about in this middle section of the pod. Usually we talk, you know, when we have a guest on the show, we talk about what their expertise is. We talk about strategy. We talk about different things that are might be bothering us at some point during the season. So that's the direction we're going here, Kevin. And I have something that's bothering me. I was told by many, including myself, that Michael Garcia was the obvious breakout candidate for 2024. I traded for him in my trading league in the offseason or right during spring training. And I kept him on my roster and I started him every single day as the Daily's Moves League. And I just keep running him out there. He got a hit today. I was pretty happy to see that as I was updating these little notes here.
And stole a base.
He stole a base. Yes. So he's providing value. But since before that, he was 2 for his last 40. And he only went 1 for 5 today. So really, he's just 3 for his last 45 at-bats. Sorry, plate appearances. And so, Kevin, you are my inside source for all things Royals. And for this offseason, you became my inside source for all things Michael Garcia. Please tell me what is going on and why I should not be worried about this because it's only, you know, April 19th as we're recording this.
Well, let me preface this by saying that Michael Garcia is one of my most rostered players, and that is in FBC leagues. And as I stated earlier, in FBC formats, we change our hitting lineup on Friday. I was to the point where I decided, you know what? I need to take a closer look here, right? Let's get to that point where set it and forget it may not be working. And I went and I tried to find what Michael Garcia is doing wrong. And the answer I came up with is nothing. Absolutely nothing. He's striking out 1.5 percentage points more than he did in 2023. 23.8%. A little higher than we'd like to see, but nothing horrible. His walk rate, slightly down, 1 percentage point. He's at 6.3, was at 7.4 last year, right? Nothing crazy. He's hitting the ball hard, hitting it harder than he ever has. He's barreling it better than he ever has. In fact, if you go look at his Statcast page, he's in the 91st percentile in base running value. He's average exit velocity, 84th percentile, barrel percentage, 86th percentile, all the hard hit stuff, right? He's hitting the ball hard. He's not chasing. That's something I look at when a guy is struggling. Is he chasing? No. 88th percentile in chase rate, 19.9%. He's doing everything just as he did the second half of last season when he was such a great player for Kansas City, and the opening weekend when those of us that did draft him were that opening weekend, he had 3 home runs and we thought, oh, we found, you know, the next superstar in Major League Baseball for our fantasy teams. But none of that has changed. He has a 170 BABIP coming into today. That is the only negative I can find anywhere. Now, I think the good luck, bad luck, cut and dry on looking at BABIP is not as overstated as it used to be, but it can still be. But that's the only thing I can find is the BABIP, 170. I left him in every single lineup, even my 12 teamers. I started him everywhere for the weekend, and I'm off to a 200 batting average from him, but I got that stolen base. I don't think this is somebody that I would understand if somebody wanted to sit him until things pick up. I chose not to. I definitely would not drop him unless you are in one of the few leagues I'm in that I don't already have him. Please drop Mikel Garcia.
I mean, I'll take some solace in seeing that the Royals have not dropped him. The Royals haven't even said that he had a day off the other day, but that was like...
That was the second game of a doubleheader. Made exactly. Perfect sense, right? That's the way to sit him for a game without telling him he has to take a day off. It was perfect.
And when he comes back in, he's still staying in the leadoff spot. He hasn't been pulled from the leadoff spot. He hasn't been sat on any day except a doubleheader day. So I'm taking a little more solace in the fact that in real life, his real life team is giving him every opportunity to get out of this funk, to, you know, put the ball in play and get on base and, you know, and show all the stuff that you talked about, how it should be translating into, you know, fantasy production, though I'm sure he cares less about actual fantasy production than we might. I wanted to also check to see, you know, where we got Kansas City, the Royals facing off against Toronto, Detroit, and then back, and then they go to Toronto, Texas, Milwaukee. None of these, you know, maybe if he, you know, he gets a couple, like a start against like Flaherty and Detroit, I don't even know, like there, or maybe if Gosman gets back on against Toronto, I'm not too scared about pretty much any of the pitching matchups that he's about to face in the next 2 weeks. So possibly there's an opportunity in the next 2 weeks to get, you know, back on board or get back to where, you know, we're hoping. And I mean, you have a full 7-game slate next week. They only have one off day the week after that. So not only the matchups, but there's plenty of games for the Royals to play in the next 2 to 3 weeks as well. So I think we mentioned that as well last week as well. The Royals, lots of games to play.
Yeah, they have a very heavy schedule coming up. They have 4 more 7-game weeks. Mm-hmm. And the rest are 6 until the week preceding the All-Star game. So not until July do they have a 5-game week.
So I guess this really, I love the fact that like we had nothing to talk about. And then I'm like, what is going on with Garcia? And then before the show, you're like, actually, I just looked into this. So I'm like, perfect, let's get into it. But the deeper like reason for this conversation though, Kevin, is like, or at least advice I would give is, like when you have a guy this early in the season that you felt so strongly about, you did like, I'm going to quote Nick Pollock quoting, Chris Towers. He was like, history didn't start 3 weeks ago. So it's like, I feel like that's like the Michael Scott quoting Wayne Gretzky meme. That's my version of it. But it's, I mean, true. Like you did all this research, you fell in love with these players, not because of like who they are or what they could, you know, have done, but what you feel like they could be doing. And just because somebody hasn't produced now, if there was some, if you did that research into Garcia and you saw a whole bunch of other stuff on the negative side, then sure, then obviously that's reason for, you know, concern. But I mean, we're at a point in the season where it's still not that it's too early not to make some kind of an adjustment, but it's too early to completely, you know, throw the baby with the bathwater, whatever that cliche is. So I mean, it's difficult to do. It's also really easy to like almost forget about it and be like, all right, no, I'm just gonna throw it in there. But it's really important that what you did, it's like, hey, I got to a point where like, I got to look into it.
Right. Yeah. It's part of, you know, we've talked about this in the past. You can be really surprised sometimes if you go look at how a player has been performing that you hadn't been paying real close attention to, but you were just sending out in your lineup every week, just assuming because of who you think they are that everything's just fine. And then you stop and look because you realize things aren't going well and you see just how bad it's been. Well, I'm really trying not to allow that to happen this year. Every week I'm going through every single player and seeing like what's been going on with them. And so I was to the point like, should I be sitting Michael Garcia? I wasn't to the point where I would consider dropping him yet, but should I sit him in these leagues for at least the weekend and see what happens? And I decided no. He is performing just fine. The ball's not finding a spot to land, and it's going
ball's fault.
It is. I'm Happy Gilmore now.
I will say, Kevin, then what you just said just proves that it's all your fault. Because if you had just sat him for a weekend, you know he'd go off.
He'd have went off. Yes.
All right. Well, that's enough talk about one specific player, which, you know, we don't do enough. I think that was fun. We might do that more often in the future. But let's get into a whole bunch of other players, Kevin, as we roll into the fifth Fab run of the season. Fair warning again, we are recording this 48 hours prior to the Fab run, at least in your standard NFBC Sunday formats. I think most weekly formats Fab runs on Sunday nights as well. But so some more information may come to light between now and when Fab runs. So obviously, you know, you need to be paying attention to everything and everything that you have available at your disposal. Daily podcasts right here on the Pitcher List Podcast Network, at the First Pitch Podcast and the Plus Pitch Podcast, right on the Fantasy Baseball Pitcher List Fantasy Baseball feed or on their individual feeds, are a must listen to on a daily basis. If you are a PL Pro member, you should be listening to the SP Fab Forecast Nick Pollock does, where he talks about all the probable two start pitchers for the week and then any other less rostered players in both 12 teams and 15 teamers. So check that out as well. You can join PL Pro by going to pitcherlist.com/premium. If you're watching this, you see that link scrolling across the bottom of your screen throughout the course of the episode. If you're listening to this, you can click the link in the show description. All right, enough little internal ad breaks. You get enough of the external ad breaks as well. So I'll stop rambling on that. Kevin, give me some power guys. We'll go in order as we always do. Home runs, RBIs for this coming week. Who you got?
I got a couple of guys that are pretty well rostered. In fact, all three of them are pretty well rostered in 15 team main events. My first one, 93%. That's Jesse Winker. It appears that he's healthy and performing. A couple of home runs on a year, and I was looking at him earlier, and he started off okay, but a little slower than he's performed over the last 10 games or so, where I believe 10 of his 16 hits are extra base hits, only a couple home runs, but a lot of doubles, right? He's hitting it in that three spot most days in the Washington lineup. Only 15% rostered in the online championships, the 12 team, five outfielder Fab leagues. So he is playing his way into consideration for those 12-team leagues. Most definitely the 7% of main event leagues where he's available. I would definitely be picking up Jesse Winker in the 15-teamers where he's available. And I'm interested in 12s. I think that 15% in 12 teams will increase after Sunday night. Another guy in a very similar position. Slower start. In fact, he started the season 0-15. I'm talking about Hunter Renfroe, Kansas City Royals, 88% rostered main events, only 10% rostered in 12-team leagues. This is a guy that a couple of years ago we talked about week in and week out, because in the shallower leagues, as well as he was performing, people were reluctant to ever pick him up. And that may be the case again, even if he continues what he's been doing over his last 11 games and 41 plate appearances, which is a majority of the season. After he started 0-15, he's hitting .250 with a couple of home runs, 8 RBI, 6 runs scored. He's doing exactly what we expect from Hunter Renfroe. It took him four games of not hitting to he started the season four games late, let's put it that way. And then the guy that is a little more available in 15 teamers but still 76% rostered, I was really trying to find a guy for 15 team leagues here, and he's actually much more rostered in the 12 teamers, 57%, and that's Brent Rooker, who's just coming back off the IL. We know he will play against lefties. He'll play quite a bit, I think, versus right-handed starters as well, if not every day. But he does perform better versus lefties. And Oakland gets three of them in a seven-game week coming up this week. So hopefully that's a nice, easy landing spot for Brent Rooker returning this weekend.
Going all the way back to your first suggestion, Jesse Winker, I feel like he was on a waterfall bid of mine for the last like two, maybe three fab runs, and just exactly. Not at the top. So I just, he's still available in most of my leagues. And it's just because I guarantee you, I wasn't the only one that just didn't win him because you won somebody else.
He hasn't been our first choice, but the pool's getting thinner. He might be moving up.
Yeah, exactly. We just talked about the three outfielders that just hit the IL. So
exactly.
A lot to replace. All right. If you don't have Michael Garcia stealing you bases, Kevin, who is going to be stealing you bases this coming week, or of course scoring runs on their own.
Right. These guys are much more readily available. And actually performing fairly well with some nice matchups coming up. Wyler Abreu for your Boston Red Sox is getting the playing time now, and will continue to, at least versus right-handers. And Boston faces 5 out of 6 this coming week. Very similarly in San Diego, Tyler Wade getting the starts at third base versus right-handed starting pitchers. They have a 7-game week. 5 of the 7 are versus righties, but what is really enticing is 3 of the 4 in that first half for our NFBC formats are versus right-handed starters, and they're all in Colorado. I'm not looking for home runs from Tyler Wade, but I am looking for that Babbitt bump. That gets him on base more often. That gets us more opportunities for him to continue to steal bases. I think he already has 5 on the year. And then I do have one that is both of those guys, 14% rostered in main events, by the way, and 1% and 0% in online championships. They're available almost everywhere. A guy that's not available in many 15-team main events is Luis Garcia Jr. for Washington. But he is only rostered 6% in 12-team online championships. He's 83% in 15 main events. This is one of those players that always intrigues me when there's this big of a gap. I understand you had 3 more teams. That's 5 more outfielders getting started. But we're talking about a 77 percentage point difference between the two. That's always intriguing to me. They have 4 out of 6 versus righties this coming week. 3 out of 3 of them in the first half, all versus righties. So he's definitely a first half play. May have to sit him for the weekend when they're facing 2 out of 3 left-handed starters, probably, the way it looks right now. The other thing with Luis Garcia, Washington is almost up there with Cincinnati. There's a big gap between them and everybody else. Cincinnati and Washington think it's Hulkamania. They are running wild.
Yeah, obviously those early trends.
Sorry for that.
You want to be paying attention to. But going back to your first suggestion, Wiley Abreu, not only is he getting the playing time, but literally every day this week, he has moved up a spot in the order all the way up to the 2-hole for the Boston Red Sox on Friday. Literally started on Monday, batted 6th, next day 5th, then 4th, then 3rd, and then 2nd. So obviously he's leading off tomorrow, and you can call it. If there are any prop bets for where he will be in the order, you better be placing him at the top for the Boston Red Sox on Saturday. All right, we have some opportunities ahead of ourselves, as you already alluded to, the Sean Bouchard, and that is because, and the main reason is obviously more opportunity for playing time, But of course, as you mentioned, Colorado is home for four in Colorado against San Diego. And then they go on a two-game set. They are off on Friday, but they have a two-game set against Houston in Mexico City. They are off the following Monday, so they still get the six games through the week with that random Friday day off. There are 11 teams that have a full seven-game slate. They include the Yankees, Toronto, the White Sox, Kansas City, Minnesota, Oakland, Philadelphia, Cincinnati, Milwaukee, Pittsburgh, and San Diego. Houston is the only team that has the five game off, but both of their off days, they also have that random Friday off day as well as the Monday. So do that with what you will. Is there, you know, what else is there to say about Sean Bouchard in this category? And or is there anybody else that sees themselves with a positive opportunity ahead that you got your eye on?
Yeah, I think I pretty much summed everything up with Sean Bouchard. Colorado, Friday's game postponed, so we don't get to see that. But I'm going to pay close attention if he's getting the playing time. Right, the only worry I have with Bouchard right now is the Rockies. Right? Every time we think we know who's getting playing time in Colorado, they pull it out from under us.
Absolutely.
So I want to verify that over the weekend. The other guy, the Chicago Cub that I brought up earlier, that I'm keeping an eye on. I could also talk about this in the wild card category, but I have a guy for there. With what's going on in Chicago, they don't have an everyday DH. They've been shuffling guys around. Like over the past week, nobody was a designated hitter for more than two games. Even Michael Tauchman was even the DH for a day. There's a guy you might remember that we talked about quite a bit last season by the name of Matt Mervis. And once again, he's hitting just under 300 at AAA. He's got four home runs. He's slugging like 600. I could see them bringing him up during this period. It would depend on, right, they just got Patrick Wisdom back. That's why I'm not really excited about it. I would be thinking this is definitely going to happen, if not for that. But so it might be a few days to see what's going on with him and how that it's working out as they shuffle around guys and fill their outfield and DH spot. But I wouldn't be surprised if we finally get to see Matt Mervis get a little bit of a run in Chicago.
That is not the name Sarah Sanchez told us to mention. Obviously, Sarah watching the show earlier, hopefully you're still on there, Sarah, but you knew she was going to give a shout out to Alexander Canario for the Cubs, filling in a more regular playing time with the openings that they have caused. So, you know, at least as a shout out to Sarah, make sure that you're keeping an eye on Canario as well. But
yeah, definitely keep an eye on this entire Cubs situation. I kind of doubt they're going to keep doing things the way they've done it over the past few days. I think they're going to want more of a stable move.
Good. Good to see Sarah is still here with us. So I appreciate the shout. And, you know, just to give her an extra shout out, there is, you know, she's very confident Canary is the dude. So yeah. Keep an eye on all the options. She's right. In Chicago.
And like we hadn't talked about yet that Sarah brought up earlier, Ian Happ left today's game, Friday's game as well. That makes another opening in the outfield. If there's anything serious there, or even if it's just a week or two, we'll get more info on that as we can, but definitely something that we're going to have to monitor over the weekend with this Cubs outfield for sure.
All right. Well, Sarah, thank you for being our unofficial guest for this week's episode. Let's move into the pitching categories. If you're not listening, I mean, you haven't been able to listen to Sarah in this episode, you should be listening to her on the Fantasy Feud with Shelly Verstrate. And it comes out a new episode every week on Wednesdays. If you're not listening to that, what are you doing? But let's move into our pitching categories. Wins and Ks are volume stats that we can hopefully get some two-star guys in there for double tapping those wins, maybe extra, you know, they could pull a Jack Flaherty and get 10 strikeouts for you in a single start. But who is out there on the wire, Kevin, that possibly could do that for us this coming week?
Nobody. There's not hopefully. Many.
I didn't say it was a guarantee. Yeah,
there's not many. In fact, the two starters that I have listed here, and I have a caveat I'll get to, but the two starters for wins and Ks I have listed are both 100% rostered in 15 team main events. Clark Schmidt is only 82% rostered in online chain. And he gets Oakland this week. That's all the analysis I need. And he's been throwing well, and he gets Oakland. So I like Clark Schmidt in 12 teamers where he's available, and that's not a lot of availability even in 12s, 18% of leagues. And then a popular pickup in the main event last week, only 61% rostered in online championships, as Yariel Rodriguez. He gets at Kansas City this coming week, which they've been up and down as far as how worried we are about that lineup. Still not a lineup I'm worried about. The problem with starting pitchers against the Kansas City Royals is I root for them to get blown up, but I still throw pitchers against my Royals. And then the following week, he's probably lines up for a two-step Kansas City again, that time at home, and then at Washington. I definitely like that two-step, especially with Kansas City being so irregular in the number of runs they put up in games. Some days they look like they can hit anybody, and other days they have a hard time scoring runs. So I'll definitely take that start to get Washington for a second start of the week. He only went 3.1 innings in the first one as well. That may be something to keep an eye on. We should expect probably 4 to 5 in that start this week at Kansas City. And then hopefully we can count on, as long as he's performing well, 5 to 6 innings in the couple of starts the following week as he is more built up. My caveat, this rolls right into our next category, Adam, is we're at the place in 15 teamers where we're looking for relievers, I think, even for wins and strikeouts, as crazy as that sounds. We've talked about this in the past. I have tried to find any type of indicators that I can, because every year there's a couple of relievers with double-digit wins. Last year it was Colin Poche for Tampa. I had 12 wins. Now, what I did, I went back and looked at a couple of the relievers that had a lot of wins over the past couple of seasons, and they don't come in bunches. They're really spread out. So to really count on the wins that you expect somebody to get, it has to be somebody you're willing to throw into your lineup each and every week and just leave them there, right? If you'd have done that with Colin Poche last year, you'd have got 12 wins and 61 strikeouts with a 2.23 ERA and 1.09 whip. And that's the reason I'm kind of merging our wins and Ks category with the ratios, because I don't want to do this with guys that are going to blow up my ratios, even though they're throwing less innings than the starters. So the couple of guys that, although I wrote them down in the ratios category, I really, in 15 team mm-hmm. leagues, these are guys I'm looking at for wins and strikeouts now. Shelby Miller in Detroit. Many of us in the offseason thought there was a chance maybe he would end up as a closer and get some save opportunities. But what he has been doing is getting wins, right? There are 5 players in Major League Baseball that have not started a game but have 3 wins. Shelby Miller is one of them. Right? He is 90% rostered in main events, only 37% in online championships. And he has a 1.74 and 0.58. 1.74 ERA, 0.58 whip so far this season. So he is somebody I'm looking at that won't hurt my ratios, may even help them, but I'm actually hoping that he continues to snag wins, right? I think there is something too. I don't think it's something that we can count on a season to season basis. But going back to our first season, when we would talk about these guys and Brent Suter was our guy that year, right? I think a team, once a season gets going, they get into the routine of, if it's a tie game or we're down by one run, using the same guy as that next guy up. Team takes the lead, they win the game, and that's the guy that gets the win. So I think we'll continue to see Shelby Miller get these opportunities throughout the season, in spite of the fact that he got losses in his last two outings, giving up one run in each. He still has a 1.74 ERA on the season. And AJ Minter in Atlanta, very similar. And he's got more availability. He also has three wins this season. He's also being given those opportunities when it's a close game, high leverage situations, but not the ninth inning. He's only 35% rostered. I think I'd rather have him than Shelby Miller, and he's more available. 4% rostered in 12 teamers. So AJ Minter and Shelby Miller are two of these five relievers that have five wins. I'm going to go ahead and tell you the other have three wins so far this season. And I am hoping, if not quite expecting, for some wins to continue to trickle in for these guys. The other guys I don't have interest in. Luke Weaver in New York has three wins. He's also got a 5.91 ERA. Right, Garrett Clevenger, I thought I was going to be more interested in. That 1.85 whip really scares me. 20% walk rate right now for Garrett Clevenger. Keep an eye on him, because he may continue to be used, right? He could be this year's Colin Pache for Tampa. And then Elvis Peguero, I looked into as well for Milwaukee. Speaking of Brent Suter, we know Milwaukee will use a guy like this on a regular basis. I'm a little hesitant at the moment. His ratios aren't great as either. ERA is under 4, but his whip's at 1.5. He's got to bring that down before I could put him in a lineup, I think. But I'm really trying to keep an eye on and see if there's any way we can figure out which of these relievers are going to get more opportunities to give us a win. And of course, the more often they throw, they're going to pile up some strikeouts for us as well.
You know what was great about all that? It's like I just felt like I was listening to a podcast instead of actually, you know, being on one. So I appreciate that. Awesome. You know, for anybody watching, they know that I stood here the whole time and you know, just took it all in, looking up other little things in the background. But anybody listening at home on Sunday is going to be like, did Adam like have to go to the bathroom or something? Or is Kevin just stalling? But it doesn't matter because all the information is gold. And so it doesn't really make a difference. There was one name I wanted to throw out, and I wanted to get your take on him and how much interest you have, because he doesn't really line up for a two start unless, you know, something happens. But Albert Suarez made his 2024 debut for the Baltimore Orioles. And I thought it was interesting because obviously this is not a spring chicken. He's like 34 years old or something like that. Played the last couple years in Korea, but he doesn't, I believe, according to Alex Fast on Twitter, and you know, I believe what Alex Fast has to say, even if it's on Twitter, he doesn't have any options left. And so this is somebody who's up until the Orioles are, you know, feel confident enough in the rest of their rotation, and then possibly he gets DFA'd or what have you. But at this time, his debut is pretty good. He faces the Angels next week. At least if they do some kind of skipping, he possibly gets that Sunday start against Oakland. Is this situation that, like, you started off by saying, like, I asked you who was available and you're like, nobody? Is, you know, obviously Suarez just made his debut, so he is available everywhere. Nobody drafted him. And he just became available in NFBC because he's made his debut. Are you rolling the dice on this because he is available? He has a good, at least a single good matchup. If he probably is in the rotation long enough to get a two-step next week. Now, that one doesn't look as pretty because it'll end in Cincinnati and it'll start off against the Yankees. But on the off chance that this week turns into a Stuttgart, or he just gets that one very positive start against the Angels, you know, are you looking at somebody like Suarez to at least, you know, make it back-to-back good starts to start off on a very good Baltimore team?
I think I would this week versus the Angels, especially in 15-teamer for sure, where I would need. Now, I wouldn't bid very much fab on him because, yeah, that next week, I'm not using him at all, which means I'm probably dropping him next weekend, even if I want to pick him up again later, right? So I'm going to go fairly low on the bid, and then my backup bids are going to be AJ Minter. right? My relievers. And Sarah is asking, would we prefer like the first reliever up? Or
oh, that's Ryan. We have more than just Sarah watching the show. That's Ryan.
Yeah. Oh, that's Ryan that actually said that. Nice. Yeah. It depends, right? If they're coming in the fifth, I definitely want the first guy up, right? Because the starter can't get the win, even if the team had the lead when he exits. It kind of depends on the team. A guy like AJ Minter is going to be used in high leverage situations, but a lot of those high leverage situations are going to be a tie ball game, and then he's the pitcher of record if the Braves score the next inning. So that's huge there. Other relievers, if they're the first guy coming out in the more towards the middle of the game, they can be more valuable. So it depends on the team and how they're being used is what I'm looking at there.
Yeah, I mean, it also depends on what you're searching for as well. I mean, if you're looking for high leverage guys, you're not looking necessarily for the win in those situations. You're looking for ERA, you're looking for WHIP, and possibly they find their way into the ninth for our next category. But if you are tracking those first relievers out of the pen, or Froop, as Ryan put it on there, I mean, obviously you're chasing wins there. You're not going to get much else. I mean, maybe they go two innings and they can really make a bigger dent in your ratios for sure. But I think it matters more. So like either one of these kind of categories, you're looking at ratios, and then which cherry are you looking for on top? The possibility of a win or the possibility of getting into the ninth for a save? I think that's what you're really kind of looking at. And it's not too early. It's never too early to be looking at what categories you can make a dent in. But it's kind of too early to see where, you know, in the wins and saves category, they can be so hard to come by based on injury, based on chasing wins, whatever, you know, the reason may be. So you know, feel free to chip away when you can possibly chip away. All right. Well, that'll segue us right into the saves category here. A piece of news that we didn't really talk about or didn't mention in the news section that I think is worth putting here, Kevin, is the fact that we got a couple teams that are going to get their closers back in the near future, or already have. Toronto Blue Jays just got back Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson into the back end of their bullpen. And then the Minnesota Twins should be getting Juan Duran back as he's feeling good in about to start a rehab stint of his own. So, I mean, the question I ask you in this category is not so much maybe who are you looking to pick up, but how aggressive are you going to be in dropping the guys that you might have held on to, like the Griffin Jacks, Chad Green is also kind of hurt right now as well, but the Yimi Garcias or the rest of the Toronto bullpen, or if you have Eric Swanson, like how much do you trust that Jordan Romano won't go back down to the IL? Juan Duran, when he comes back, how healthy he'll be when he starts? Are you still stashing those backups, or are you just simply throwing them out and figuring out a new stash that might move into a role? Because if these guys are healthy, we know that they have the role. That's pretty clear. It's just how much do you trust that health to stay intact through the course of the next couple months?
So this really depends on how healthy the rest of my team is, and who I may already have on my roster, like Shelby Miller and AJ Minter that we were just talking about, because Griffin Jacks will remain very highly rostered, especially in 15 teamers, and I would expect even in 12 team leagues as well. Wani's the next guy up, we assume, although it didn't always work out that way even for this first 3 weeks of the season. But he, like Shelby Miller and AJ Minter, should give us good ratios, maybe some wins, maybe a save now and then, rack up some strikeouts as well. Much better than some of our definitely seventh and even some of our sixth starters that we have on our rosters, especially in certain matchups. I think Yimi Garcia, he's been pitching very well this season as well. I would think of him in the same way, but maybe a step or two behind Griffin Jacks in that same manner. So both of these guys are guys I'm willing to hold on to, not necessarily because I think anything's going to go wrong with the health or performance of Romano or Duran, but because they're like just like guys we just talked about in the previous category, and they can be valuable to our team.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly where I expected you to go with that. And, you know, we talk about these relievers being more valuable than I think most people kind of give them credit for, at least on the surface, especially when they are on a run and they're trusted by their team to go in, not so much, not necessarily when they come into the game, but to pitch multiple games per week and actually get that volume to tick up. So if you're going out there three times a week, and even if it's just one inning, maybe you get, you know, one and a third, or maybe sometimes you get stretched out to two innings, and you can get as much out of a starter that might go a short game, but you're doing in these small spurts. So your strikeout rate is usually a little bit higher. You're facing the right part of the lineup that's going to, you know, benefit your skill set. Thus, your ratios are typically going to be a little bit lower. Then those starters that you put in there as a spot start in a bad matchup, and you get four innings out of them, but you're also losing, you know, two or three runs. There's a reason why they only went four innings, put it that way, as a starter. More than likely, they're giving up some runs and they're not striking out a bunch of guys. So a lot more value there than I think than a lot of people are suggest or, you know, think, at least on the surface.
While we're in the save category, where there's been a lot of talk about Milwaukee's situation throughout this season, and there for a little bit, it looked like Uribe was going to run away with it, and then all of a sudden, Piamps got a couple of save opportunities. McGill's first game back, they tried to let him get a six-out save, but he blew it. So that's how crazy these save situations are. Milwaukee was given a third guy an opportunity. The other two both had performed fairly well. I mean, they hadn't been perfect by any means, but they hadn't been really blown up either. And they were still allowing a third reliever to get an opportunity here. And it's crazy. And it was nothing egregious. He gave up one run in one and two thirds innings. I don't think that's anything horrible, but just question marks all over the place. A far cry from what we saw last season when everything was really stable.
Sure. I mean, Jeff Hoffman is still available in about 16% of online championships as well. So that co-closer, that closer committee in Philadelphia seems to be going back and forth. Alvarado just got the save on Thursday. Hoffman, the last save that Philadelphia had, he racked that up as well as a win. So, you know, a name to at least throw out there if you need a little piece. And as a shout out to Ryan again, he echoes the fact that you should not be dropping Yimi Garcia. All right, final category here, Kevin. You know it's my favorite one, the wild card category. Who you got that just doesn't fit the mold of any of the other categories that we talked about?
Yeah, this one is intriguing to me. I kind of surprised myself, but I think, remember when we thought Cincinnati had way too many players and they had to trade like 12 guys
specifically in the infield, but yeah,
Yeah, and their outfield was fairly crowded as well. And this is going to really upset anybody that's reaping the rewards of Stuart Fairchild being 5 for 5 in stolen base attempts so far this season. But Connor Capel at AAA, he's hitting .296. He's getting on base at a .444 clip. His OPS is 1148. He has 6 home runs and 4 stolen bases. So that's a lot better all-round production than what we're seeing from Stuart Fairchild. And I think while Cincinnati is battling some injuries and trying to figure some things out, if Fairchild continues to hit around 200 in spite of his stolen base success, Connor Capel is somebody I'm keeping a close eye on. Of course, he's 0% rostered, wasn't drafted anywhere, so in NFBC we can't go pick him up right now, but he's somebody I'm definitely keeping an eye on and am interested in if he does get the opportunity, because he's playing great baseball right now. And he does have 125 MLB at bats in his career. He hit .280. It's somebody I'm definitely keeping my eye on. 26 years old at AAA. You know, Cincinnati's not as crowded as it was at one time, and this is somebody that I think would be a little surprising to some people if he gets the call, but I'm definitely keeping an eye on him.
Yeah, really surprised. I mean, as I'm looking a little bit more into him, that he is not on the 40-man roster for the Cincinnati Reds.
That's a problem.
Yes. Even with the major league experience that you mentioned. So we'll see if that's enough of a hurdle for the Reds not to, you know, throw him out there as a replacement.
Not that I ever hoped this on anybody, but with all the injuries, all it takes is moving one guy to the 60-day IL.
Yeah, sure. And then he's on there, and then you have him. All right. Well, that is a ton of players to think about in all those different categories. Kevin, thank you so much. Leave us here, though, with any last second piece of advice for the weekend for those watching us on a Friday and then listening to us on Sunday before they make their bids. Any other added piece of advice that you can take home with them?
I'm going to double down on basically what was our Michael Garcia conversation. And I know people are tired of hearing it's early, don't overreact, right? But both good and bad situations. However, it's early, don't overreact. And just dive in a little bit before you make any rash decisions, especially if you're going full-blown dropping a guy, not just benching, right? Is it going to kill you if somebody's on your bench for 3 days and they hit a couple of home runs? No, it's going to be upsetting, frustrating. Yeah. Right? I benched Ryan O'Hearn for the first half of the week in a couple of spots. Fortunately, I didn't bench him everywhere, but I benched him in a couple of spots where I didn't think he was going to have quite enough playing time for the first half of this week. He had 2 home runs right away on Monday. I was just throwing stuff across the room, right? don't go all out dropping somebody unless you really see a reason for the underperformance. And the Michael Garcia conversation we had earlier was a perfect example, because if you just look at his line right now, he'd be a drop for a lot of people, and I think that would be a big mistake.
Yeah, I mean, you said it earlier, but like, it is good to look into it, but then you can make adjustments. You can make decisions if you look under the hood and things don't look good. You got lucky. 100%. You look under the hood, things look good. The process over results, all that. But if process and results are both in the basement, then I mean, you can make an educated decision on what changes you need to be making as well. So, do your in this one case, I will say, do your own research.
right.
Not typically it's a phrase that I use, but I'm going to use it here.
Justin and Paul on Sleeper in the Bust, I believe Thursday's episode, so the most recent episode, they were talking about Tristan McKenzie and the news on he's pitching with a torn UCL. And we've seen other guys do that. And they started out the conversation with, oh, he's right. This explains everything that we've seen that was bad so far this season. He's an easy drop now. Well, then the conversation got to, but he's facing Oakland on Friday. And sure enough, yeah. It wasn't spectacular, but he went five innings, got the win, six strikeouts, only gave up three hits. He did have three walks. So this is a pretty mediocre, I would say, start when you take into account who the opponent was. And so maybe that is still the route I would go. But it's just another example of, in that case, once you know the reason for the poor performance, and it's a reason that isn't going to fix itself, at least we haven't seen UCLs magically fix themselves very often in the past, that now you have a reason. And that's an example on the other way, on when you can't, it may lead you to take action.
Sure. Absolutely. All right. Well, that is sound advice and something to consider as we get further and further along into the season. And sooner or later, we will be able to say it's not early anymore. And so that day is probably not today. But that is going to wrap it up for episode 160 of On the Wire. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80 grade. That's all spelled out. Kevin is at Hasting Kevin. And of course, follow the pod at On the Wire Pod. After all that, I am Adam Howe. And on behalf of Kevin Hasting, thanks for listening. And we bid you goodbye.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.